So tonight's topic, tonight's talk will dig into a little bit of philosophical language, but don't get afraid. But I'm going to try to keep everything very practical. I'm going to try to keep it as down to earth as possible because the talk is, after all, titled Unbiased Reality. So hopefully I'll stick to that. Reality. I'm not here to spout off pie-in-the-sky ideas or theories. Just the opposite, in fact. Any genuine philosophy is one that helps us to become more human, helps us to become more ourselves. It's one that corresponds to our everyday real life. It is, in the final analysis, completely real and completely rational. Thomas Aquinas defines truth as the agreement or conformity of reality and the mind's judgment on reality. So tonight, we're concerned with precisely that, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And so with this firmly in mind, let's begin. So there was this Italian priest. His name was Father Luigi Giussani, and he made it his life's project to engage the human thirst for the whole and entire truth, as revealed most especially in the person of Jesus Christ. The Word made flesh, that is God's most complete, the full image of the invisible God for us to see. And the movement that Father Luigi Giussani formed is called Communion and Liberation. And for people who have never heard of this movement, they usually think it's communist. But it's not. It's awesome. Sorry to any communists in the crowd. But its goal is actually pretty simple. It sounds fancy, but it's very simple. And so the goal of communion and liberation theology is to form mature Christians. And by mature, I mean Christians who love the truth more than their idea about the truth. Who love the truth. And Christians believe the truth not to be some sort of abstract idea, but to be a person who became flesh and dwelt among us in Jesus. Now, this is a lot easier said than done. As Father Giussani points out, any serious inquiry into truth needs what he calls a healthy dose of realism. Realism, being realistic. We hear that. Don't throw away those dreams. Be realistic. That's not what he's saying. By realism, Father Giussani means to experience reality in total humility, free from any of our projections or preconceived notions, from any like ideological systems, free from any prejudices. In other words, Giussani is appealing for what I've called unbiased reality. To be totally humble and totally unbiased toward reality is a posture that allows for real conversation to happen, real dialogue to happen. Monsignor Albacetti, he's another priest of this communion and liberation, not communist thing. He says this, which I love this quote. He says, anybody who is committed to rationality or reason, I can enjoy many cappuccinos with them. And what he means by that is he can sit down and enjoy a cup of coffee with someone who's like earnestly seeking truth, who's earnestly seeking the entire truth, regardless of their belief, regardless of what position they're coming from. He can enjoy a conversation with someone if they are honestly, sincerely pursuing the entire truth. Jesus says point blank, ask and you shall receive, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened unto you. That is something that we should stake our life on, and it gives us confidence to share our faith with people. This conviction of both Father Giussani and Monsignor Albacetti has to do with that deeply traditional Catholic belief that the human person naturally thirsts for the whole truth. We want to encounter the transcendent. We want the absolute truth. We find ourselves incomplete, bored, and sad when we're deprived of that full truth. Bishop Barron, if you've never heard of him, check him out. He has on the Word on Fire show recently, it's his podcast, he talked about this. He said, he compared the mind to a search engine like Google. Apparently he went to Google headquarters and talked to them. And he said, the mind is a search engine. It is always questing. It's restless. The mind is not passive. It actively seeks what it wants. And what does it want? The truth. But how much truth? Not just this or that truth. The more answers you get, the more questions you have. What's the mind finally after, he asks. And then he answers it. What the mind wants, finally, is the unconditioned truth. It wants to know everything about everything. It wants truth itself. And the shorthand term for that is God. I experienced this actually on the playground this afternoon with the little second graders at Our Lady of Mount Carmel. One of the kids, he came running up to me and he's like, Anthony, can you tell us about the Father like Jesus did? And I was like, like, who are you? You're not a second grader. You're like a you're Father Luigi Giussani in like imposter. But anyways, so I was like, what? I was like, well, what do you want to know about him? And he responded with like childlike simplicity, and yet it's like the heart of the matter. He says, well, everything. He wanted to know everything. Let's get back to that. That's the reality of what we're supposed to be living as people. So a second grader taught me that. I wanted to share that with you. But I was just blown away by that. I was blown away by his honesty. But yeah, to reiterate, Father Giussani believed that the human mind and heart, for that matter, because that's just as much a part of who we are. We're not just purely intellectual people, you know. We are frustrated and unsatisfied with anything less than the whole truth. And this brings me to a really important point. At the end of the day, whether we realize it or not, all of us in this room right now, we are all philosophers and we are all theologians. We all worship something and we all believe something. And deep down, every honest human being is seeking a satisfying and full answer to the ultimate questions about life. And the most obvious one is, what is truth? Or better yet, like, who is truth? We express our personal philosophies and theologies in how we approach the world around us, how we treat one another, how we behave, the lens through which we see reality. And this personal theology can be good, and the way that it's good is that it aligns with reality, or it can be defective, which is a theology that does not align with reality. It's off. And there's a great book by a theologian. He's named Frank Sheed. And he wrote a book called Theology and Sanity. And one of his central themes throughout the book is expressed in the title itself, which is basically just good theology is nothing more than sanity. To align yourself to the truth is to be sane. It's not all that complicated. But to be a good theologian is to be a person who receives reality in that proper way, in that humble way, right? Totally open, free from that preconceived notion. So when we are sane, we're receiving everything as it actually is. But we often think of theology as kind of a system of beliefs that we kind of believe arbitrarily, you know? And so we have to work really hard to believe it, you know, to hold this giant system of Catholic theology in our head at once. And it's exhausting, right? That's tiring to try to do. But at the heart of our faith is that radical claim that really the only good reason to be Catholic, the only good reason to be Christian, is that it is true with a capital T. It's the only reason that I'm signing up to be a priest. If that's not the fact, then I'm wasting my life. And everybody that goes to church shouldn't go to church if that's not true. Christianity is not something that defies reason either. It's not something anybody concocted or artificially produced. It is downright sane to be Christian. Yes, in the face of what the world might say, the shocking claim of people like Frank Sheed and Giussani and Lorenzo Albacetti, not to mention the whole Catholic tradition, is very simple. To be Catholic is to be fully rational. To be Catholic is to be fully rational in the bigger sense than what modern contemporary people say reason is. To be Catholic is to be a fully reasonable human being, someone who takes into account the whole of reality and leaves nothing out. So good philosophy is one that corresponds to the way things really are, right? Truth that is outside ourselves. Truth that is true, whether or not we like it. Truth that is eternal. Truth that just plain is. The words Moses heard from the burning bush might come to our mind here. Out of that amazing image that he sees of the bush that's being burned without being consumed, this massive voice comes out and it says, "I am who I am." Moses asks his name and he says, "I am who I am." God is who he is, regardless of our systems of thought about him. He just is, regardless of our prejudices. He just is, regardless of our personal biases. So the honest job of human beings is to align ourselves to that eternal truth, to grow closer to the one who is truth, who is the great I am, right? We're supposed to kind of align and grow in union with him. That's what he's inviting us into. And without that relationship, without this religious affirmation of what really is, we're bound to create for ourselves all sorts of false systems, all sorts of made-up philosophies, false theologies, without approaching the truth with that humble openness and a radical willingness to align ourselves to it, no matter what the cost might be. We will inevitably distort reality if we're not willing to do that. We'll end up creating God in our own image, which we do all the time. This is what we're really good at. We like to create a God who fits into our life and makes us feel good. We'll end up creating a biased reality. Unfortunately, I think this is kind of where we find our culture today in so many different ways. We live in an age that really prefers ideologies over the pursuit of that unbiased reality. Father Giussani defines an ideology as, he says, it's a construction developed from a preconception based on an aspect of reality, an aspect. Even a true aspect, he says, but it's based on an aspect which is formulated for the aims of a philosophy or political project and made into an absolute. So an ideology takes an aspect of reality and makes it into the absolute. So C.S. Lewis warned just against this kind of thing, this misguided absolutization in his book Mere Christianity, which played such a huge role for me in my conversion in like learning that, hey, believing in God is reasonable. He says this: the most dangerous thing you can do is to take any one impulse of your nature and set it up as the thing you ought to follow at all costs. There's not one of them which won't make us into devils if we set it up as an absolute guide. And then he goes on to talk about how, like, you know, love for humanity. Oh, well, you know, as long as I love humanity in general, then I can make that an absolute, right? But you end up defending the indefensible, right? Or maybe you say, oh, well, mother love. That's like the love of a mother for her child. That's like, let's make that the absolute. Like, what could be better than that? Well, a mother who, like, in some of C.S. Lewis' writing, he talks about mothers who would rather their son be in hell with them rather than allow that son to enjoy heaven. So even that's not good enough. An ideology, therefore, is a reduction of reality. It's a reduction. It's a half-truth. Any ideology inevitably leaves something out, and to that extent, it is unreasonable, or it is insane. No ideology can contain the whole of reality, because it's only concerned with that little tiny aspect of it. Remember, human beings desire truth himself, not a system of ideas about the truth. Now, granted, I'm willing to admit, a lot of ideologies include good things. And some leave out more than others. So I'm not saying all ideologies are like downright intrinsically evil. I just think that they're limited and they don't contain the whole truth. And no ideology is sufficient in itself. It's always a reduction. It's always a construct that kind of limits the whole. So one of the most common ideologies, just an example, would have to be materialistic scientism. Materialistic scientism. So materialism means that all there is matter. That's it. And scientism is the only knowledge that we can have is that which we can empirically verify through the scientific method. So we can kind of see right away the damage that this does to the fullness of reality. it's limited. Materialism reduces reality to just that which can be experimented on under a microscope. And what we're left with is a very restricted understanding of what we can know to be true. A consistent materialistic lens, if it's consistent, which I think it rarely is actually, would basically reduce everything that everything like love, everything like friendship, everything like forgiveness to something that is nonsensical, something that's unintelligible. And if that's the case, then life is not worth living, guys. Life is not worth living if that stuff is nonsense. So G.K. Chesterton, another one of my favorite writers, he's great, put it bluntly when he says the materialist philosophy is certainly much more limiting than any religion. The Christian is quite free to believe that there is a considerable amount of settled order and inevitable development in the universe. But the materialist is not allowed to admit into his spotless machine the slightest speck of spiritualism or miracle. The materialist's world is quite simple and solid, just as the madman is quite sure that he is sane. Within this kind of limited and constrained system, aspects of reality that are considered unscientific or lacking concrete evidence don't just go away, though. You know, they're still a part of who we are as human beings. We can't ignore them because they're just part of who we are. In fact, as I said before, they're actually the most interesting parts of reality. They're actually the things that matter most to us. Forgiveness, love, friendship. Giussani uses the following example to illustrate this point. Mankind, by its scientific advancements, can accurately measure the orbit of Earth around the sun. So we know that. We know what that measurement is. It's an unassailable fact. However, like, be honest with yourself. Like, which would you rather know? Like, the orbit around the sun or the fact that your mom loves you? Like, just let that sink in. Like, okay, like, we can know down to, like, the millimeter what the Earth's orbit is. But, like, what do you measure a mother's love with? How can you do that? The choice, obviously, is pretty clear. Knowing that your mom loves you is infinitely more meaningful to you as a human being. Or if your mother, like, fails in some way to love you. You know, that's more meaningful to you as a human being than any kind of piece of cold mathematical information, as useful and as informative as that might be. You can't see love under a microscope. Yet it remains entirely reasonable, right? It's so reasonable to believe your mom loves you. Like, it's one of the most reasonable things that you can possibly affirm. I can't go and measure the Earth's orbit, but I can call my mom after Theology on Tap and say, hey, I didn't suck tonight. So, yeah, it's love is must be taken on that good faith. It's not blind faith. It's good faith. It's about trust. It's about trust in a person. Like, that is not something that's reducible to atoms and molecules. Love is a part of the human experience, of reality as a whole. It's part of the fabric of what makes life worth living. And so our philosophy that we adhere to should account for that. It shouldn't leave it out. The most important, meaningful, and compelling aspects of the reality that we find ourselves in, and that's a good thing to remember too, we didn't ask to exist. So the most meaningful, compelling aspects of reality that we find ourselves in are not compatible with a materialistic, scientistic perspective on reality. So we have to conclude that that's just too small. It's too small of a worldview. Again, on the G.K. Chesterton can pipe in and offer these awesome words. He says, as an explanation of the world, materialism has a sort of insane simplicity. It has just the quality of the madman's argument. We have at once the sense of it covering everything and the sense of it leaving everything out. He goes on to say that the materialist's cosmos may be complete. So they may have like a lot of the answers. Or have an answer for everything, but still, his cosmos is smaller than our world. So, if an understanding of a cosmos leaves out things as important as friendship and love, then it's not the whole story. And I mean, I'm just afraid that our Western secularized society has largely ceased to approach reality with that simple openness that Giussani's trumpeting. And instead, we tend to kind of look at the world with clouded eyes. And I'm including Christians in this. You know, I do this a lot. So they're eyes that are filmed over with a thousand different distorted lenses that have been imposed on us. So these are things that we have grown up with. We have to become self-aware of these things, I think. That's one of the steps to, like, naming it and putting your finger on the pulse and allowing God in to, like, open our eyes so that we can see, wait, that's not the whole story. Why has that been told to me? Why is that a part of who I am? Like, it doesn't add up. Because there's a lot of aggressive ideologies out there. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there's a lot of them. Just go on YouTube for like 5 minutes, and you are like ankle deep in like the angriest, most aggressive, furious ideologies. And if you like listen to that stuff too much, it really undermines your ability to receive reality as it is. You know, you watch the news. If you watch CNN, you have a perspective on reality. If you watch Fox News only, you have a perspective on reality. Like, we have to kind of open our eyes to the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is God. So he's the guy that's going to help us with that. But yeah, gender ideology, materialism, hedonism, scientism, take your pick. They all prop up one aspect of reality as the absolute. They hold us back from receiving truth because they're burdened with like a thousand different incompatible presuppositions. And so if we align ourselves to those things, then that is to submit to the definition of insanity. It's not aligning ourselves to the truth. So what happens when we do kind of have a restricted view of reality? Well, when truth is so limited, our desire for absolute truth doesn't go anywhere. We still want absolute truth. But for lack of a better word, I guess we become kind of cramped by all the biases. We become cramped, and our human nature just realizes something is wrong. There's more to the story than this, but I feel cramped. I don't know what to do with this. So the human person, as we know, as the church teaches, we're made in the image of God. We're made in the image and likeness of God. And so that means that we have something of his infinity embedded in who we are, you know? Like, Rob and I were talking about YOLO before. It's like, it should be YOLF, because it's you only live forever. So, but yeah, we're made in the image of God, and that image cannot be locked within the cage of ideologies. I was talking with Father Joe Goldsmith from Mount Carmel, and I was telling him, I was trying to explain to him what my talk would be about tonight, and he's like, yeah, like, Artford, you know, like, well, you know, and if you know Father Joe, that's kind of what he does. But he's like, yeah, like, well, you know, like, in zoos, you know, if you put, like, a tiger in a cage, it, like, just dies. That's what we are. We're tigers put in a cage by these ideologies. Like, we just lose the will to live, you know? Like, oh, my gosh, if materialism is the only thing there is, if, like, I mean, you know, John, that burger looks really good, but if that's all there is to life, like, man, that sucks. Like, it's not worth living. That's kind of what I'm getting at. And there's repercussions, right? If we willingly stay in our little cages, then there are serious repercussions to our ability to thrive as human beings. So I think this is kind of why we look around and maybe see a lot of sad and anxious and bored faces. Like, there's a lot of apathy, you know, people kind of don't have that much motivation to commit and stuff like that, or they just get angry at you. So I don't know, like, what's going on there? Like, why are people angry? Why are people tense? Like, maybe they're in a cage. We instinctively know that reality is being confined and restricted by the prevailing opinions of our age. And so we shut down and numb our expectations, right? So think about that. If if you are raised in the climate of the material world is all there is and there's no spirituality whatsoever, then but there's something in you that hungers for the absolute, the unconditional truth, then you're going to feel like the cosmos lied to you. You're going to feel like, well, I have this weird desire for everything, but there's basically nothing. So there's this this tearing apart of the human person, which is really where the word diabolical comes from. You know, diabolic, for something to be diabolic means to be torn asunder, to be torn apart. Sin divides. Sin rips apart. It rips us apart from God, who loves us. So yeah, that numbing of our expectations, we feel kind of torn apart. And what's more, Monsignor Albacetti, he uses this turn of phrase. He says, he warns against a reduction of desire. A reduction of desire. We're all about desires in our day and age. But when we give into these small little cages, we actually fall prey to a reduction of desire, you know, because we're settling for less. We lower our expectations and thus invite a spiritual boredom into our heart, a spiritual boredom known as asadia. That's kind of the deadly sin of asadia, a spiritual lethargy. And when the world constantly shouts at us that there's no transcendence, that we are strictly biological, and that the only meaning in life, whatever, is what we happen to choose to assign to it, well, that's just a recipe for despair, guys. That's just a recipe for despair and sadness. And we're built for joy. We're built for happiness. The human being has a natural desire for transcendence. And when we ignore the thirst for true religion, when we ignore that thirst, we suppress that desire and we then become less human. So that's a lot of bad news, right? Oh my goodness. Wow, you guys are just chowing down and I'm just ranting and raving. So what is the antidote? What is the solution? How can we combat this? How do we get to that unbiased reality? In a word, the incarnation. The incarnation is the answer. The moment that the Word became flesh in the Virgin Mary's womb was the moment that God proved to us once and for all that he was not just an abstract idea for us to think about all day. God isn't a convenient ideology that we can cling to or hide behind. Jesus Christ, the Word made flesh, is willing to step down into our brokenness. He's willing to step into our condition so to lift us back up again. And what's more, he smashes those cages. He smashes them open. I love the icon where, on Holy Saturday, when Jesus is just, breaking the doors of hell and, pulling Adam and Eve up. That's what he's trying to do to each of our hearts. And we can resist that. He's not going to blast the doors down. But that's what he wants to do. It's in the incarnation that the second person of the Blessed Trinity, eternal and timeless, somehow, beyond any expectation, steps into time and shows himself as the fullness of revelation. And this isn't something that just happened 2,000 years ago. The incarnation didn't just happen in Israel. It continues today. And we experience it, whether we know it or not, whether we realize it or not, every single day. So this happens a couple times. First, through the ministry of the church, especially in her sacraments. This is the incarnation extended through space and time. Jesus' body, the body of Christ. This isn't just an ideology. This isn't just a nice idea floating around in space. It's actually right here. This is it. That's crazy. When we love one another, we are being Christ to other people. Christ is the one who baptizes. He's the one who forgives us when we totally screw up royally. He is the one who offers us his own body and blood. You know, that's not an idea. That's something that you can actually eat. When we encounter the church, we encounter the body of Christ. When Paul was on his way to Damascus and he got knocked off of his horse, Jesus like appeared to him and asked him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" Like, Saul's like, "Who are you? You know, I've been beating up all these Christians. I mean, look at Stephen. Like, I got all these nice clothes at my feet to show for it. But I don't know you, sir." And Jesus says, "You know, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting." He identifies himself with the church. It's so intimate. It's so intimate. He sees us and he's like, that's me in a sense. It's mind blowing to think about that when we're baptized, we are grafted into the body of Christ. When we cut ourselves off from the church, the body of Christ, Jesus might ask us, like he asked Saul in a similar way. He might ask us, why are you limiting your understanding of reality? Why are you cutting yourself off from the fullness of life? Why are you doing this? Why are you cutting yourself off from me? All right, so first, we encounter the incarnation through the church and the sacraments. Second, it's related. I mean, it's basically the same thing, but I'm going to pay more attention to this or kind of zero in on a particular aspect, which communion and liberation kind of talks about a lot. We experience Christ's tangible presence in his saints. In his saints. These are the people who have aligned themselves with an unbiased reality. They are the ones who have become so perfectly united with the one who is himself the great I am, the absolute truth that we all thirst for. Their life is the life of God. They no longer see things dimly as in a mirror, you know, clouded, filmed over by ideologies and stuff. They see God face to face. They see God face to face, and that is what we're built to do. The beatific vision is what we're thirsting for. They see the reality of God. They see him face to face. So when you meet a living saint who hasn't been canonized quite yet, someone who is really pursuing the truth, we find ourselves forced to ask a question like, am I pursuing truth like that person? Am I really trying to like learn about this God who's pursuing me already? Am I open up to that? Am I open to that, truly? Do I really want that? Yeah. I mean, I ask myself that. I mean, sometimes I wonder if I really want God. I don't know if you guys do. So, I mean, this isn't a question that's healthy. Like, and God's like, good. All right, I'm going to crack open your cage a little bit wider and get in there. It's going to be awesome. So this kind of availability to the truth, though, it cracks open our heart. It invites grace in. And when someone pursues God, or rather allows God to pursue them, it causes people around them to ask questions, to wonder, maybe there's more to life than I realize. Maybe this limited cross-section, this little tiny aspect of reality, isn't the whole story. Saints don't settle for small-minded ideologies and intellectual prejudices. Saints want the fullness of truth, the fullness of reality. As I close this talk, I've been talking a lot, it's my sincere prayer that we never settle for the bias of this world. Because God wants us to be free. God doesn't want us to just sell out to some like system of thought that somebody else came up with. Like, he wants to give you himself. I encourage all of us to just trust that God is pursuing us, that he wants to give us everything, and that if we allow him to do so, he certainly will. So thank you very much for listening so attentively.